All right, we are live here with a Sloss rant from the Philadelphia suburbs. It is November 9th, Thursday, and we're finally back. We have not been back since last Monday. Lost the voice a little bit. Finally coming back. I took a little bit, took some medicine, took some time, but now the voice is back, and I got a lot to talk about in terms of three of the New York teams. Now, to catch you up before that, we'll talk about the picks from last week. As they go 3-2, we bounce back after the week before going 2-2-1. And it's always nice to have a winning week for sure. We're sitting now at 30-13-2 on the season. Seattle was definitely the wrong side getting 6.5. The Pats laying the 2.5 was the wrong side. Eagles find a way to cover as they win by 5 when they were laying 3. The Raiders beat up the Giants, and we'll get more to the Giants later. They were laying 1.5. We took the Bengals with probably the worst of the numbers that were out there, laying the 2.5 as the Bengals beat the Bills, I believe, by 6 points. So we go 3-2. Again, we're sitting at 30-13-2 on the season. If we were in that circa contest, we'd be tied for 34th, which doesn't sound like much, but with this thousands and thousands of people in that thing, so 34th is pretty darn good. And we would have, I believe, either the third or the fourth most wins. I believe it's the third wins. I think someone's in there with 32, or maybe it's 33. Maybe our 30 would be good enough for the fourth most number of wins. All right, so that's where we are there. I was not able to record a podcast giving out those plays, but those plays were publicly documented on my Twitter account, @Sloss_sports. All right, now, team number one that we're going to talk about here is the New York Mets. And I'm not a Met fan, but I have a lot of Met fans in my life. There's some Met fans in the family. And I got to talk about this situation, this absolute abomination by David Stearns on his first big move as kind of the president of baseball operations, because they're not going with the GM, of the New York Mets. So if you don't know the story, we'll give it to you real quick here. Stearns, he reaches out to counsel who's on a, you know, he's on one of those dead duck type of situations with his deal back to expire. He reaches out to him the last week of September or early October, whatever the case might be, as the regular season was about to end. Stearns, of course, worked with counsel while Stearns was with the Brewers and counsel was managing the Brewers. And counsel was being underpaid, right? And he, being counsel, he uses this leverage to drive the price up. Because everyone's like, oh, he's going to go to the Mets. But he played the Mets into getting the Cubs offering him an absolute fortune to manage them. 5 years, $40 million for a Major League Baseball manager. These managers, these, you know, not as experienced managers, and I know Council is a little more experienced, but these managers, they're making usually $1 million, $1.5 million, give or take, you know, sometimes as low as $850,000, $900,000. So to see that type of money was only able to be done by leveraging his relationship with Stearns to drive up the price for the Chicago Cubs. And I know that Ross, the manager of the Cubs, who won a World Series with the Cubs in 2016 as their backup skipper, he absolutely is the one that gets screwed over beyond belief in this situation here. But really the point of me talking about this entire situation, it's not about David Ross. It's not about the Milwaukee Brewers. It is the fact that boy genius David Stearns, the guy who grew up in New York City, was supposed to be the smartest guy in every room he walks into, he got absolutely played by counsel. Played him like a piano. I mean, they knew about this relationship. And you let him run off to the Chicago Cubs, and now all of a sudden you're scrambling for a manager when you probably shouldn't have even fired Buck Showalter to begin with. I mean, if Stearns' whole goal was to present to us, and maybe he's playing 4D chess, if his whole goal was to present to us as baseball fans, even some people as Met fans out there, that I'm playing 4D chess, I'm going to make it seem like I'm going to bring in counsel, but really I'm just going to bring in a yes man to kind of be a data applicator and not really use his own baseball mind, then congratulations, Stearns. You're right, but I don't think that's the case. I think you got played by counsel. I think you took a manager off your team in letting go of Buck Showalter, a manager who you didn't even have the fortitude to go talk to him, have a conversation with him. You sent the dead duck GM Epler in there to fire him. Now you don't have him. And ask yourself this question. Would you rather have this new manager who was the Yankee bench coach, and we'll get to that more in a little bit, would you rather have him or Buck Showalter if you're trying to win not only championships, but trying to put together a competitive team on the field, where the Mets are kind of in a little bit of limbo right now after they cast away Scherzer and Verlander and David Robertson in the middle of the season. So, Stearns, you got played here. I don't want to hear anything else from any Met fan other than the fact that you got absolutely used, and that was used to create leverage to bring Counsell that massive contract. There's no other spin you can give, honestly. There's no way any Met fan can give this type of spin. And I've heard this pushback like, oh, Stearns didn't reach out before taking the Mets job. You're lost. If you don't think that these guys who had obviously some type of a relationship were going to be talking to one another before the ink was dried on the paper with Stearns' deal with the Mets, you don't understand how these things work within sports, because there is no doubt in my mind that Stearns thought he had Counsell in the bag, and that's why he let go of Buck Showalter. So instead, enjoy the former Yankee bench coach, because the Yankees, and I'm going to talk about them in 1 second here, Yankees were so great. I mean, they were 82-80, and that pains me as a Yankee fan. So enjoy him. It's not even like you're getting a bench coach off a championship team. It's not like you're taking Texas' bench coach. It's not even like you're the Angels taking Ron Washington, who at 71 years old was the bench coach for the World Series winner a couple years ago with the Braves, because you're just getting a guy who's going to be a yes man. And again, if you, and we'll get to the Yankees in a minute, I promise here. But if, again, if you look at the last three World Series winners, the Braves, the Rangers this year, the Astros in 2022, these managers are old school baseball guys, whether it's Snitker, whether it's Dusty Baker, or whether it is Bruce Bochy. I hate to say it, but you need a manager in there who has a feel for the game, who, yes, he's going to maybe look at analytics, apply analytics, but he's not beholden to do exactly what the front office asked from him time after time with decision after decision, because he's not a guy who's just happy to be there, so to speak, because they have a managerial pedigree to stand on. And I know that the guy the Mets brought in, again, Yankee bench coach, I know he managed with the Yankees, I believe it was the Florida Gulf Coast League, you know, but that was a long time ago, and that's not Major League Baseball. And I'm going to look up his name here, because even after taking my notes here, I totally forgot his name, even though he was with the Yankees sitting on the bench. Carlos Mendoza, there we go. I'm sure Boone calls him Mendy, as he likes to abbreviate with everyone. So, Stearns, you got played taking the bench coach from the Yankees to now be your manager. Go enjoy after you let go of Buck Showalter, who's been a tremendous skipper everywhere he's been. This year, I understand they got rid of all the players. They weren't as good as they should have been. They had all the hype, but that's okay in my book, considering they just folded in the middle of the year and traded everyone under the sun for the Mets. Now, the Yankees. This is my team. I'm passionate about the Yankees. I feel like some of my best content that I give everyone, best podcast that I record, is talking Yankee baseball. We're going to talk about Cashman, all right? So the comments that Brian Cashman made saying, and I don't want to use this type of language, but we are really F, fill in the rest of it, good. Brian Cashman, you are so arrogant. You are so ridiculous with those comments. You went 82-80. This is not 2002, 2003 Brian Cashman, where you could rest on the laurels of being in the World Series in 01, winning them from 98 to 2000 with you as the general manager. No, we are in 2023, okay? No, you're not all that good. Signings that you've made have gone absolutely terrible. Trades that you've made have gone absolutely terrible, whether it's Joey Gallo, whether it's Montas, who had some shoulder issues that they missed, whether it's trading for Giancarlo Stanton, who, again, that was a move that I supported, but I'm not the general manager of the baseball team. You want to go back even further, whether it's trading for Sonny Gray. You want to go back to the early 2000s. I don't act like I don't know what's going on here. Carl Pavano, what's his name? Jamie Reich, the guy from Cleveland who beat them in the 97 Division Series when they brought him in so much later in 04. Your moves have been absolutely terrible. Javier Vasquez, Kevin Brown. I could go on and on with this. The only guys that have really panned out as big-time free agent signings were Sabathia and Cole, and anyone could have made those signings. I understand Cashman finds value from players, bringing in guys like DJ LeMahieu. He goes, wins a batting title, goes, hits 29 home runs, has his best season of his career in 2019. Okay, he's made plenty of moves like that. 05, Sean Chacon and Aaron Small saved the day with the pitching staff. Yeah, I've been following this team for a long time, okay? I know baseball, but you're so arrogant in your statement. You have not been in a World Series since 2009. Since then, the Texas Rangers have been in three World Series and won one. The Kansas City Royals, the freaking Kansas City Royals, went to back-to-back World Series. They went to Game 7 of one of those World Series and won one additionally. You even had the Arizona Diamondbacks just made a World Series. This is not the D-backs with Schilling and Johnson and Grace and Luis Gonzalez. This is the D-backs with Ketel Marte, with Corbin Carroll, with Merrill Kelly. I mean, yeah, these guys are good players, good pitching staff, but you haven't been in a World Series since 09, and you're resting on your laurels because you think you got cheated so badly in 2017, which you probably did. You got beat again, though, in 19 by those Astros, who you should have beat them. You got beat again in 22, in which you got swept by them. So, no, you're not doing all that great, and I don't want to hear that you have such great baseball play, such great baseball people in place, from the GM to your analytics department to the on-field coaching staff, including the manager, because, oh, the Mets hired our bench coach. Who cares? The Mets got played. The Mets were in an absolutely desperate situation, and they figured, let's just get a guy who's going to be a yes man and a data applicator, who I've said earlier. Your comments are ridiculously arrogant. And the reason why he's able to do this is because he has a job for life. This is not something that people are talking about. Yes, they're talking about the fact that Cashman most likely has a job for the rest of his life. I get it. But the one thing that they miss, the one thing that people do not understand about this Brian Cashman situation, with him being the general manager of the Yankees, is that he is best friends with the owner. Okay, the owner considers him like a brother. Within the past 13 years, I know this is a while, but he's lost his father, this being the owner of the Yankees. He lost his father, he's lost his actual brother. Cashman's been with him through thick and thin in some level with the New York Yankees, I believe since 1989, 1990, some level. You know, he wasn't the GM until 97 or maybe 98 after Bob Watson stepped down. He is not in a position, he being Steinbrenner, is not in a position where he's going to lay off a guy that he considers like his brother. He's not going to do it. I hate to break it to you, Yankee fans. And you can kick and you can scream and you can jump on top of the B train, the D train, or the 4 train. It doesn't matter. He's not firing this guy. So just stop wasting air. Stop wasting your breath saying, oh, we got to move on from Cashman. Because once Steinbrenner fires him, and again, I don't think this is going to happen, but once he fires him, he ruins a lifelong relationship. Gone. Out of nowhere. Or not out of nowhere. Gone. It's just gone. Because there's no coming back from it. This is a personal level story. It doesn't matter the bad moves that he makes being Cashman. It doesn't matter that your rivals, like the Astros, like the Red Sox, you know, show up and they make World Series and they win World Series in the past 15 years or so. It doesn't matter that even lower level teams like the Arizona Diamondbacks make World Series. This guy has Teflon, and it's due to the personal relationship. And the ironic thing in this is that you continue to employ a manager like Aaron Boone, who all he does is a yes man to the GM. And yes, he builds relationships with the players. They all seem to like him, but he doesn't build the relationships that hold the players accountable. Okay? I don't think Boone's the problem as the manager of the Yankees, but I don't think he is 100% the solution. I would have even taken a couple of years ago after the Red Sox beat him in that wild card game in 21, and I know this is a little bit of revisionist history, I would have been okay bringing in Buck Showalter. He was working for the YES Network at the time, doing some games part-time, so he was kind of back within the folds of the organization. I think understanding that Castro's not going to get fired, I think you have to then change the manager. And after only winning 82 games, and Cashman wants to sit here and tell you, oh, it's so great, we didn't have a losing season, we're so close, we're right there. No, you're not. But after that, you got to make a change. And I understand, as I've just said, it's not going to be Cashman. So why not Boone? I would have even taken Ron Washington. Just try something different. The message is stale. And Boone can do his, you know, his tirades, he can go after umpires. He can tell us that his guys are, you know, savages in the box, whatever that was 2019. That's a while ago already. He can defend his players. The players can love him, but they're not showing the performance on the field. And I'm not trying to say, oh, if George Steinbrenner was still alive, because he's not, that, oh, they'd switch managers. I think it's justified to move on from this manager. And again, it's not because I think he's a bad guy. It's not because I think he's a bad manager. I think that when you do not have the success that we've come to know as Yankee fans, you have to try something different if you're not going to switch the organizational philosophy and the guy running the team in Cashman. It's that simple. And I understand Boone didn't have that much to work with on the field. I mean, really, it was Judge and a bunch of quadruple A guys last year down the stretch, Billy McKinney's and you know, guys like that. I don't even remember their names because they're just so irrelevant in the grand scheme of things in Major League Baseball. You had Judge when he was in there, and he had a great year when he was healthy, but he was injured. Okay. And you had Torres, who was a slightly above average Major League hitter, and you didn't have much else. So, again, it's not all Boone's fault, but you got to at least try something different because it's not working. Okay. And they're not going to move on from Cashman. I've said this now enough already. They're not moving on from him. But, hey, the owner, he's happy because the place sells out. They bring in money hand over fist. The tickets are ridiculous. And I didn't even go to a single Yankee home game this year. And I understand I'm not in New York, but I'm 2 hours, give or take, from the stadium. There's people who are in the New York market, technically, who it's still going to take them 2 hours to drive to the stadium. You know, me coming from Philly, I got to go through Jersey, go over the G-Dub, whatever. I'm not close, obviously, but as a diehard Yankee fan, you'd think I would have made it my very best business to get to a game this year. I didn't even bother. Once they went on that horrendous losing streak over the summer and they fell to under 500, I said, forget this. Who needs this? I went to a game in Baltimore in April. Things were looking good. Judge hit 2 home runs. But people are going to lose interest eventually. And then maybe that's when you change the manager. Maybe that's when they decide to move on from Cashman, which, again, I don't think he'll do. But once that ballpark, if it ever is empty, then maybe that's what time for. All right, let's talk about the Giants here. All right. I picked the Raiders to win the game, or I picked them to, win, because I had them needing to cover the game there at the 1.5-point spread. The Jones injury, it's devastating because it's probably going to be the last time you view him as the long-term solution as the quarterback for the Giants. If you go back and look at some of my old rants that are probably only on Facebook, I don't think these were on YouTube, or definitely the Schloss Rant podcast on Spotify was not a thing yet. I didn't like the way that Daniel Jones threw the ball. I didn't think he'd be a long-term solution in the NFL. And for the most part, he's been kind of hit or miss. He's had 2 good years. 2019 was pretty good when he played, you know, and last year obviously was pretty good. The numbers weren't great last year, only the 15 touchdowns. But I think at this point, it's okay. It stinks for him that he got injured. But look, at least he got that big contract from his standpoint. And this season has gone down in the dumps, honestly. You could argue the team should be 4-5 right now instead of maybe 2-7. And, you know, there's injuries all over the place. And you knew that there was going to be some type of regression after the 9-7-1 year last year, in which everything seemed to go their way. I mean, go back and watch the end of that Ravens game there early in the year. But now you're looking at a team that after they opened up 7-2 last year, they're 4-13-1, including that postseason loss to the Eagles in their last 18 games. That's more than a season sample size. And I'm not saying Daboll's job should be on the line, because I don't like the ridiculous instability of let's bring in a new coach 2 years later, let's fire a new coach, that cycle that they seem to be on from Judge to Pat Shur, or McAdoo to Pat Shurmur, to Judge, to now Daboll. I'm not saying get rid of him, but I'm saying this. Jones, I just don't think that he's going to be the guy to win a championship. I don't think he's the guy that, you know, you can put everything on his shoulders. Sure, he's shown glimpses second half of that Arizona game this year, but think about how bad Arizona is. I mean, that's not an elite NFL team. That's not even a mediocre NFL team. It's just a flat-out bad team. And I think from the Giants' standpoint, if you take a quarterback in this year's draft, which you're in the – if you're going to be drafting top two, three, or four, I think you absolutely 100% have to do. You're going to have a year in which you're devoting a lot of resources to the quarterback because you can't cut Jones. It would be like around the 68-something, some-odd million-dollar dead cap hit. All right, so it's cheaper to keep him, even if he's going to be your backup. And then just kind of factoring in what – these early drafted quarterbacks are going against the cap. It's around $8 or $9 million. So now you're looking somewhere in the low 50s, give or take $1 million here or there, devoted to the quarterback position for your top two there. All right. And that, you know, that's a lot of money, obviously. But at least you get, if you get that rookie quarterback, whether it's Drake May, whether it's Penix, whether it's Caleb Williams, you get the guy on the roster, you give him a chance to win the starting job in camp if he's truly as impressive as you think. And if you're going to be drafting someone, I think he should be that impressive where you start him anyway, all right? So from that point, then you look at 2025, where if you cut Daniel Jones, you got to give it, – it counts a $25 million dead cap. So now all of a sudden you're only paying in the 30s combined. And then after that, you get 3 years in which hopefully at that point you have this new star quarterback, 3 years of, you know, reasonable team control, with one of those being the fifth-year option, which, of course – if he's doing well, you pick up. And I don't blame the Giants for not picking up the fifth-year option. It's almost like how good Daboll was last year. It was kind of a curse going forward because then you give Jones the big contract, and here we are where you're not quite sure he's the answer, which I don't think he's going to be the answer to lead them past what they did last year. I think that was kind of the top of it. Because remember, you talk about the season preview I did. I wanted to give out the Giants as a lock to miss the playoffs, but I felt that minus 235, that's not something that I'm going to go out there and give because of just minus 235. That's just insane. So you knew people didn't think that this Giants team was going to be good. So, again, I can't kill Shane for paying Jones. They really had no choice. It's not just a pushback from the fans if you moved on from Jones after winning a playoff game last year. I think the guys in the locker room would be like, you know, this team's been garbage for almost a decade, and you win a playoff game, we're not going to bring back the quarterback. What gives? And you didn't have a high draft pick, so what were you going to be doing? You'd be floundering anyway. You'd be, you know, slightly better, but then you wouldn't have this draft pick based on what's transpired this year, most likely to happen. And I don't think the players are going to tank. I don't think Daboll is going to tank. And again, I'm bringing back Daboll next year. I would tell him that right away. You're coming back unless there's just some type of crazy locker room mutiny. You can lose games, but you can't lose the locker room. And I'm hoping that that does not happen with Daboll. You could even make the argument, and again, I don't like this argument, but people are maybe making it, that you bring back Jones, you let him start. But I think if you're drafting a quarterback, you got to put him in right away. Because to me, that's a half measure. And if you're a fan of the TV show Breaking Bad, Walter White once said, no more half measures. If you're a fan of the TV show The Sopranos, like I am, more is lost from indecision than poor decision. I don't think that was Tony's quote, but it was someone on the show's quote. And I think bringing back Jones would be somewhat a form of indecision to bring him back on a trial run. So I know this season stinks. I know it didn't go the way that some people expected. I wasn't one of those people who expected this season to be a massive slam dunk. I mean, I gave out Jones like over 17 and a half touchdown passes that he finished the year, and, you know, maybe just from the sheer fact they'd be down at the end of the game, you get some garbage time touchdown passes. That's obviously not going to happen with the torn ACL. But I think it's better to just realize that the season's over. You're going to play out the stretch of games. The players aren't going to tank. The coach isn't going to tank. Keep Tommy DeVito in there. There's no reason to play Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley's not the answer. I'm not saying DeVito is, but, you know, maybe he finds something. Maybe he shows you that he deserves a look, and maybe at least he can show you he's a backup quarterback going forward. I'd be happy if DeVito goes in there and goes on some crazy winning streak and they get you to, you know, 8 wins even, and maybe he's the guy, but I don't see that happening at all. So I think best case scenario is to just play DeVito, give him a shot. He's worked hard all year from all accounts, and see what happens. So at least you know you're out, and if you're a Giant fan, just watch the other games, okay? There's a lot of entertaining games watch the games, handicap the games, do whatever you got to do, and hope that they get in a good spot to draft, and hope from there they take the right quarterback. All right. Coming up in the podcast over this weekend, should be dropping, today's Thursday, probably Saturday night, so right before you go to bed, probably we'll have Cousin Johnny on the podcast. We'll go through some NFL picks. We always look forward to that. But for now, that's all I got. Mets messing up the situation with the manager. Yankees, Brian Cashman, just absolutely arrogant, absolutely lost. And the Giants, reality's facing. Jones is not going to be the quarterback. He's not the long-term answer at the position. Schlossman, live, Philadelphia suburbs. We'll see you later, everyone.